Welcome to the Bicycle Media Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the health of the cycling industry.
Not a lot of people had that tone that just said, ride whatever bike you want to ride.
There's a couple of things about building a custom bike.
What these e-bikes can do.
It's quite hard for them to train when they don't know what they're training for.
I started to demystify things.
But if you don't have the right staff, that's game over.
You're not selling at that point, you're educating.
Big thanks to our coffee sponsors, Roasty, for all their support for the podcast. Make sure and check them out at roasty.ca. They've been delivering coffee to Edmontonians and deliver across Canada for orders over $40. Check them out. Big thanks, guys, as always. Welcome back, folks. Going to start off here with a little thanks to Dave Rome, author here with Cycling Tips. Said, Dave, can you jump on the podcast? You love tools. I love tools. Let's talk. Said, sure, man, definitely. Checked out a few episodes. Have some feedback for you. Great. Sounds good. He said, you got to shorten the intro, buddy, and dial back that sweet background music. It's drowning you out. So big shout out, Dave. This episode is with Reg Mullet, former Guinness record holder for the most feet descended in 24 hours. Really great conversation with him. He's a very humble guy. And I want to give another big shout out to anyone that is involved in trail building. Your stewardship and your donation of your time to make the tracks available for others is good servancy. So shout out to you guys. We're going to talk a little bit about Reg, about the 24 hours that he spent leading up to it, the work that he does. We're going to even talk about his opinion on e-bikes, but I'll let him do all that. So without further ado, here's my interview with Reg Mullet. Reg, thanks so much for being on the call this afternoon. We'll keep it short and brief so you can get out on a ride later this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for the great intro there, Cody. Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Cool. For folks that are listening that maybe don't know much about you, can you talk a little bit about riding in your career, and we'll dive into, you know, your achievements, but how did the bike enter your life and to where it is now?
Yeah, so I'm not sure one could really call it a career, but mountain biking certainly has been the biggest passion project of my life. So I grew up in Newfoundland, where the mountain biking scene was very late to blossom. I never really got exposed to mountain bikes or the mountains till I moved west in Alberta in the late 90s. So we can kind of reel back to like 2001, and I was in Golden, BC for a work gathering, and I was gassing up my Jeep at this local Husky gas station there, when out of the blue, this shredder eared into this steep gravel slope behind the Husky gas station and, ripped down that slope and then proceeded to pull a manual across the parking lot while my jaw was basically at my toes in complete awe. It was one of those flashbulb moments, and boom, the idea of purchasing a mountain bike was instantly planted in my brain. So at the tender age of 30, sometime in 2002, I purchased my first mountain bike. So it was a secondhand K2 Proflex Animal. So that's right, my first bike had tiger stripes, was a full suspension, and had hydraulic McGurr rim brakes. I just started spending some serious time in the mountains, and I really found at first like the mountain bike really enabled me to go further and see more. And those first few years were really something. Like I had a bike, but I didn't even have any idea that you needed to lower your seat for the downhills. I had a bunch of friends from Newfoundland that were also kind of adventurous and keen to try out mountain biking as well. So I picked up this book called Backcountry Biking in the Canadian Rockies by Doug Escott. And basically, we just started ticking off all the rides in that book the first summer. And before I knew it, I was definitely hooked on bikes. So at first, it was like the challenge of riding the trails and building the skills. Like, I felt really consumed by that from the get-go. And I'd come from playing competitive basketball basically all my life up till my mid to late 20s. So I was like very used to breaking down skills and working on progression, and I already had a really strong fitness, which really helped with my new passion with mountain biking. So it became pretty evident right off the bat after that first summer of biking that, I had found my thing, and that mountain biking was going to be, an endless life pursuit. So I recall pedaling up the Moose Mountain Road around 2003, and lo and behold, this, lifted truck zoomed by me with a bunch of DH bikes hanging over the tailgate. And I was near the top of the mountain, and they stopped adjacent to this guardrail near the top, and then proceeded to unload the bikes. And some began dropping in on one of the old DH trails at Moose. So I quickly pedaled up to them and inquired with a couple of the lingering dudes on what trail they were going to ride. This one was not in the book. And I could see them scouring over my bike, my lack of armor, and basically my complete joeyness. And one of them said, maybe it's best if you don't try this. This is a DH trail and it's very hardcore. So I watched them all drop in, and that warning wasn't really going to stop me. So I followed and dropped in myself. And what I discovered on that day in 2003, with all the features and the a trail that was kind of designed for bikes and was steeper. And that's kind of when my downhill obsession started to unfold. So I think we fast forward from 2003 to 2007. And so I got 4 years now of basically being on an endless road trip where I'm traveling all over Western Canada, basically in search of single track. So I entered my first race that year in 2007. And it happened to be the Red Bull Mount 7 Psychosis race in Golden, BC. So somehow I managed to win my category in that race, and I ended up with the top 10 on the fastest time of the day in a pretty stacked field. So it was basically my first kind of little wave of notoriety in the sport. It was also around that time that I started doing a bunch of trail building on the trails out at Moose Mountain, and also started to like rally the small but intimate community that we had out there. The timing started to seem right to like look to legitimizing the trails out at Moose. And me being the friendly newfie, I stepped up and brought everyone together to discuss this at length. And in 2009, myself and several other trail builders and some of the seasoned riders at Moose took the plunge and worked with the provincial government to sanction and protect the trails at Moose Mountain by forming the Moose Mountain Bike Trail Society. So this initiative for me, is certainly one of the highlights and something that I'm proud to be involved with, and I'm sure will be a legacy that will continue much longer than my involvement with bikes. So anyone listening out there, be sure to purchase your membership for your local clubs. And if you enjoy the trails out at Moose, please become a member and come on out to the trail days. It's always fun, and it's a great community to be involved in. So to continue the play-by-play here a little, still kind of chasing the sport in a similar fashion, and on this endless road trip, so to speak. But from 2012 to 2013, I took a sabbatical from my environmental science career and basically chased bikes full time. So for months of living out of my van in the Whistler parking lot, to even evolving to working in the industry as a bike guide, coach, and trail builder, I was basically now like fully immersed in the bike world, and I was having a time. I guess it was also around that time that I started getting a little support from my local bike shop, Calgary Cycle, and from my favorite bike brand, Santa Cruz Bicycles. And fall 2013, I had a terrible crash in Whistler Bike Park, and sent my left humerus out through my tricep and forearm, and as a result had to have my left elbow fully rebuilt, as it fractured did extensive damage to the distal head of my humerus and went into the elbow joint. So this was a bit of a turning point for me, as I didn't know where I would be physically coming back from this injury, and if I could even continue working as a trail builder, coach, and or bike guide. So I went back to my environmental science career at that time, but fortunately, the surgeon did an amazing job on my elbow, and I was basically back doing light fat biking within 3 months after the crash. And it was also at this time that my good buddy, Mark Hames, also known as Cram, approached me about going for the Guinness World Record stint. So we can dive into that in a bit more detail a bit later if you like. But to me, it was a lofty goal, considering my current injury. But it was also an opportunity, and it was an opportunity to show that with a ton of work and commitment, and if you're fueled by passion and have a good attitude, you can really overcome a huge hurdle. So I signed up. I was like, "Cram, let's do it!" And I really ramped up my training and prep, and we lined up a date to go for that record in August 2014.
We are going to dive into the record achievement because that is massive, especially for somebody who, set it as a goal and went for it. It's truly inspirational. But were there descents leading up to that day that still ring true to you? I mean, you talked about the time that those guys unloaded the downhill bikes and then dropped in and told you not to go, which naturally sparked your curiosity, which would be a memorable ride. Are there some others that you look back and think, man, that was so cool, I'll never forget that?
This is a hard question, because I enjoy basically every ride. But leading up to the Guinness World Record day, basically most of my favorite descents were ones that had really really huge relief. Back to Mount Seven, it's kind of hard for me to get away from that because this is definitely one of my favorite trails. But it's it's a 4,000 foot descent, and then another really memorable ride around that time for me, it was also Martha's Creek in Revelstoke, which is another 4,700 foot descent. So I really felt drawn, connected to these style of rides, because it just allows you to get in that flow state on a bike where you're just kind of feeling as present as possible. And, these bigger demanding descents seem to facilitate that the best for me.
And was there a lot of pressure after, coming onto the scene pretty quickly and doing so well with the psychosis that you thought, wow, how do I manage this? I mean, cause you're an athlete, you're experiencing pressure all the time. I mean, I just think about, the titans of the sport, but did that change things for you from a sort of sports psychology standpoint, that you jumped on the scene, done pretty well, and were people turning their heads saying, "Who's this guy and what's he doing crushing it?"
Yeah, I think I was as surprised as anyone else on the result from that first race. And the sport for me, it's never really had it's always been about fun and passion and connecting in wonderful places with good friends. So there hasn't been a ton of goals and expectations. That being said, though, I did do a few years of racing after that race, so it did inspire me to kind of, dig into that aspect of the sport a bit more. I had some successes as well, mostly like in the master's class. But still, it was always about fun for me. And it still is to this day. And one of my favorite lines with the sport, and I get to throw it out there a ton, like anytime that I'm on a trail and some hiker or something, mention something, I always throw out, fun is the easy part. They all say like, "Have fun." And I'm like, "Fun is the easy part." So, I think that's a pretty consistent theme, throughout my pursuit in mountain biking.
Let's start on that special day. You've put in the training time. You guys have done your homework. You're ready to go. There's perhaps some jitters between you and Mark, and now it's time to get going. Kind of walk us through a little bit of the day, right through when you knew you had really achieved something special? Because it's a pretty arduous thing. And the more and more I kind of dive into, you know, inspirational sports documentaries, you know, guys doing 50 Ironmans in 50 days across 50 states, it's the kind of thing that leaves a mark on you when you hear somebody's stories. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast and to share it, because I just kind of read about it and thought about it and just went, wow, what a thing to achieve. Human achievement at that level is so special and inspirational for people in so many ways. So kind of walk us through just that day, what that was like.
Yeah, it's cool to hear that perspective. I mean, the Guinness World Record Day, that was a dream day for a guy like me. You have to understand, I had a good 10 years or so of always wanting more. Like I would leave every day biking wanting more, though I was pretty savvy. You know, shuttle days were always limited from logistics or from other riders, you know, in my group getting tired while I was still raring to go, and chairlift access. You know, it offered more freedom to charge and you know, tabulate and have big days. But I was still constrained, as most lifts only operate from like 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So to finally have an opportunity to shred as much as I wanted, or what was potentially physically possible, had a bit of a Christmas morning perspective for me. And I think Cram could, speak to that as well. But this was a team effort. Like, Cram and I had a swack of support and help from both sponsors and friends. You know, many friends stepped up to help with things like shuttling up the mountain, doing the timing, being witnesses. We had to have someone witness and document the start and end of each lap. We had to have a mountain biking, international mountain bike commissioner on site. So fortunately, we had a friend, Richard, who was able to do that. He had to spend 24 hours outside on the mountain as well. We had mechanics there. Calgary Cycle provided mechanics to keep our bikes rolling throughout the 24 hours. We had people to ride with us for every lap. And most importantly, both our spouses, Sharon for Mark and Annette for myself. They did all our meal prep and basically made sure everything was running smooth at base camp. Like, this was a full team effort. The list could keep going on that. If you want to learn a bit more about the day, like, I recall camping out on the mountain in my van the night previous, and I had this like nagging rotator cuff issue in my left shoulder from overtraining in Fernie, the week previous. You know, it was improving every day throughout the week, but it was still casting a ton of doubt my way. You know, I recall trying to fall asleep the night before the event, and pretty worried about, and concerned that, the shoulder was going to be my Achilles heel, and it was going to be going to cause me to have to pull out. Anyway, I convinced myself to stop worrying about it and to get a good night's sleep, and somehow a miracle happened that night, and I woke up the next morning with some drastic improvements. So we set it up so that we would start at 8 p.m. at night so that we would be fresh for the nighttime laps. So we dropped in on 8 p.m. on August 30th, 2014 for lap number one under cloudy skies, but great conditions on Mount 7. So we always had two buddies ride behind us in case we had like a debilitating mechanical, then we could snatch one of their bikes and keep on trucking. We also had an extra DH bike at the bottom in case of any issues with our Santa Cruz V10s. Fortunately, somehow, though, we did the whole event without one mechanical, which is a very good testament to the Santa Cruz bikes. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. So just as it got dark, the plot thickened, unfortunately, and the sky opened up and a monsoon commenced. And I don't know if you know Mount 7, but it's gnarly at the best of times. But all this mud and lack of grip was really starting to hamper our descent times. Fortunately, we both know the mountain inside out. There's a bunch of sections that are clay-based. And if you don't know and expect them to be coming, they're gonna cause some problems in a hurry. Yeah. I think the bigger issue, though, was that it was just really cold and miserable. But we persevered through the night, and somehow by the morning, we're only about 30 minutes to an hour behind our target. And at dawn, the rain stopped, and, you know, we kept charging. One thing I definitely would like to talk about is the ride up. So it's 15-kilometer Forest Service Road to the top of Mountain 7. And throughout the record, we ended up doing 27 laps. And a typical ride up the mountain takes about 25 to 40 minutes. And we had three buddies there with their monster trucks. So we had a friend, Mike, with a Baja truck with 15 inches of travel front and rear. And another buddy, Rob, with a Ford Raptor. And then another friend, Clayton, with a souped-up lifted Chevy. So the ride up, we were actually doing it in like 8 to 15 minutes. So it was definitely not a rest on the way up the mountain. We were getting bounced around all over the place, and we also had to use this time to eat. So, it was pretty full on. Fortunately, my shoulder was holding up, and Cram and I survived the night, and now we're starting to feel pretty good. And by mid-morning, with a good 8 hours still left in our 24-hour shred fest, we started to find our rhythm, and we were really having fun with it. The dirt was just getting better every lap, and so was our pace. I think it was lap 21 or something where we had our fastest time. Now the energy was building from the group, and although we're both starting to feel it, our training was paying off. And when the bikes got pointed downhill, it just felt like magic. By lap 23, we started to realize that we were going to tag our goal, getting 100,000 vertical feet, and we really started to relish in all the moments. And fortunately, we're able to set up for the final lap. We're able to have all our friends meet us halfway down the mountain for our shared victory lap. And I doubt there'll ever be as much hooting and hollering as it was going down on that lap. So we finished lap 27 with 22 minutes left on the clock. And had tabulated a whopping 107,000 vertical feet of descending in 24 hours. So, what a day. And again, a huge thanks to everyone that stepped up to help for that.
Unbelievable. You know, the average person wouldn't even be able to fathom the way the body is probably aching, the way, you know, that the mind goes into that flow you refer to, or eudaimonium. And as a goalie coach, I definitely, you know, wish that upon all my athletes. That's a special place because that takes time to kind of pull yourself out of and get back to. Now, fast forward almost a year later, you're, you know, sitting around when the mailman delivers something that had to be fantastic because Your record certificate arrives in the mail, and as you hold that thing in your hand, do you relive some of that? Can you just smell the smell of the mountain, feel the air, the crispness of it? Does a lot flow back to you? And you probably walk by it. It's probably hanging somewhere special, I would imagine. And do you relive some of those moments, the painful ones as well as the euphoria?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like for me, it wasn't ever about the Guinness World Record. Like I have the certificate, and it says right on it, you know, you are amazing, which is kind of funny in a way. But you know, it was more about experience for me, and just to have that opportunity to like test myself, and you know, for Cram to test himself, and to just see, you know, okay, we freaking love this sport. And we have this huge passion for it. And we've been chasing big days, you know, our whole career, our whole, you know, every year. And so it was more about that experience and just pulling everything together and just seeing what I could do personally than you know, doing the Guinness World Record. That was just icing on the cake, I guess, a bit of a bonus thing, you know, from the whole event. So yeah, I don't even have it framed up. So I do pull it out and look at it from time to time, but you know, it was deeper than that for me.
That's like catching, you know, a monster trout on a fly and holding the record for, you know, biggest trout on a five weight and just releasing it. You know what I mean? Just get a couple photos. They're stashed somewhere in a drawer, but you release that fish, you carry on, because no plaque or anything would capture that. So kudos to you. Passing the torch on and sharing, because I think as it appears to me, you know, those experiences matter the most to you. And that assisting of others, you know, the environmental science work you do, and then certainly with Moose Mountain. Let's talk a little bit about what Share the Ride means to you and why it's important to get young kids into cycling, you know, regardless of the discipline. Because if it's like hockey, you know, we're you and I are true blood Canadians, and we see a lot of barriers to entry for certain sports, be it cost, be it a whole host of other things. Why does Share the Ride mean so much to you, and how can we get more kids on bikes in general?
Yeah, what a great program. You know, it was a joy to be involved with the Pink Bike Share the Ride program. You know, for any that are not in the know, the Share the Ride program's initiative set up by Pink Bike and a bunch of industry folk, and it's actually funded by community donations that enables the purchase of bikes for kids that may not otherwise have an opportunity to have their own bike. Here in Alberta, Stephen actually, who runs a DH series in BC but lives in Calgary, organized the Calgary chapter of the Share the Ride program. And we had 3 years of providing bikes for kids in the Calgary area. And the positive impact, joy, and sense of freedom that these new bikes bring to these kids is unmeasurable. There's so much excitement on bike giveaway day. And yeah, I'm stoked to have an opportunity to be part of playing that bike love and, you know, paying it forward. I was even able to get one of my neighborhood kids hooked up on year one. And Bronze and I still play bikes in our back alley to this day on the regular. So yeah, it's an awesome program. And the way it was set up in Alberta, we did this, the one event at the Exshaw School, and it was set up to be kind of like a training program for the kids in the school there, where it would be different. Kids would utilize these bikes year after year, and then it would be instruction brought in on both on riding and on maintaining and even a potential trail building aspect to it. So hopefully it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving there. And if any of the listeners here, definitely sign yourself up to donate to the Share the Ride program. It's a pretty magical thing.
What does the future hold for you as we wrap things up? You know, is the body holding up as you continue to descend some pretty gnarly terrain?
Yeah, I mean, I put a lot of work into kind of keeping the body together. it's a nonstop fight, but you know, I just want to keep on keeping on here and just keep doing my thing and you know, chasing this passion further. Like, it's you know, my enjoyment of the sport has only grown over the years, and my depth and connection to both the sport and the community has just only grown over the years. So you know, yeah, I might be getting a little older in age and whatnot, but you know, I still feel very youthful at heart, and I think, you know, bikes are a big part of that. And I just want to keep on keeping on and just give her.
Do you think we could talk a little bit about your opinion of the emergence of the electric mountain bike? And it always comes up as something that levels the playing field, as well as the cheater bike by some. Certainly the Santa Cruz Heckler has come out and seen many riders jump on board. Do you think that technology is beneficial to getting more people to enjoy the stoke no matter what their body allows them to do?
Yeah, I really do. Like the e-bikes are, you know, allowing people that may not have had the opportunity to go places. And then it also offers a whole nother level of longevity to the sport. So I definitely, I support e-bikes. It took me a little bit to kind of warm up to the idea for myself. I do have concerns about trail access and wear and tear on trails as a result of, you know, extra kilometers as a result of e-bikes. But it's obvious they're not going anywhere. And it's obvious, and I've tested them, that they are super fun. And so I really think that as a community, we need to embrace e-bikes and, you know, work through the challenges. And I do foresee myself down the road owning one. Maybe not this year. I was tempted with that Heckler because it looks amazing. But instead, I picked up my very first full-on XC bike this year. So I kind of went a total different direction. And I don't have a tall boy, Santa Cruz tall boy, for this year to ramp up my kilometers. But it's on my radar. And I would love to see, for me, what I would see from it is an opportunity to really do more, descend more, ride more, in the same length of time. So I hope to see e-bikes with longer range, lighter components, and lighter batteries and stuff like that, in the future. I do have a lot of concerns about the wear and tear items on these bikes. Like, I already can't keep up with the amount of tires and brake pads and maintenance that I have to do on all my bikes. So I can only imagine that if you're descending twice the distance every time that you head out, what impact that has, especially with added weight to tires and brake pads and stuff like that. So yeah, hopefully whenever I get to that point, you know, I got a brake pad and tire hookup somehow.
I appreciate the answer and the honesty, Reg. And I think probably when it comes known that you've taken the leap, sales will go through the roof. Reg, my man, thanks for being a guest on the podcast. It is always an honor to talk to new people and Albertans and Calgarians alike. And I really appreciate, again, your stewardship of the trails. And I'll wrap up there so I don't take up any of your ride time here on this beautiful Thursday.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And just, you know, shout out to, you know, some of the companies that support me, like Race Face and Calgary Cycle, and obviously Santa Cruz Bicycles and their Reserve Wheels. And I also have a new ambassador program with Cliff Bar happening this year. So yeah, get on your bikes, people. Have fun. And, you know, all the best under these, you know, current COVID circumstances.
Big thanks to Reg for his time. Really loved him painting the scene of that 24 hours and the achievement that he had. So, very humble guy. Up next, two cool cats from Specialized Canada, speaking with Andrew Greger and James Janet, and they talk a lot about what came out this year with respect to their e-bike line offering. We dove into a little bit about e-bikes, Retool Fit, and how cool that work is. And Andrew does a fair bit of it with the pro guys, but also how that filters down into the retailers as well as their SBCU. So, gonna dive into that one here. Again, thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. Give it 5 stars. My grandma thinks it's the best podcast. Hopefully you do too. And again, thank you so much for tuning in. Cheers for now.